So following the trend of getting successful podcasters on the show, we're keeping it going, getting another one.
It's such a transparent attempt to bring on good podcasters to try and raise the profile of our own.
You know what, it's so cheap, but and it's still not working, is it? Let's face it.
But I'm never going to give in. Like I said, we're the Jeremy Corbyn of podcasts. We're failing, but we refuse to give in. We're never going to step down.
You can't knock a dedication to the cause on this.
But all of that besides the point, I'm actually very, very excited for this guest.
I have heard a snippet of what it might be and what it's going to include, and I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, hopefully our guests will remember the last time we had a local, not a local celebrity, an international celebrity on the show, which was Mark Fay.
Made the BBC news and everything.
Made the news. He was a superstar, went viral for months. So, since he appeared on our podcast, it received great success. He decided to start his own podcast with his friend Rory. As tour guides going around the world telling great stories from all of the different countries that they visit, which got me very excited because I've been listening along to their podcast avidly, and I've been quite a fan of some of Rory's ridiculous stories that he's had all over the world.
Rory, aka Melon Man.
Melon Man himself, another celebrity, is coming onto the show.
Well, I'm very excited, so let's hope he can give us some tips on how to make a good podcast.
Hey, Melon Man.
I'm doing well, I'm doing well. Melon Man's in the house.
How's it going over there in Texas?
Texas, it's going well. The trains are out. You might hear some trains tooting in the background, but we're doing pretty well. It's a bit of a cold snap here.
If you hear any tooting in the background on this end, it's also definitely a train. So how have you managed to get over to Texas anyway?
Good question. So once the pandemic hit, I was in New Zealand leading a sea kayaking expedition. And so we were evacuated and I actually ended up going back to Australia and trying to escape Australia because the quarantine restrictions are pretty strong. But I managed. And once you get into Texas, it's fine. Just go for it. There's no restrictions here.
That's quite interesting because the last time we spoke to your co-host, Mark, he was in the midst of a lockdown in an Australian hotel when he got evicted from Europe. So it's quite funny to see that you were offered up the same deal and just thought, fuck it, and escaped to Texas and left Mark behind.
Follow the freedom.
Follow the freedom. It was. I flew through Doha and everybody in Doha had masks on and shields and everything. But then I rolled up to the Dallas flight and half the people were just maskless face. They were just like, oh, there's no pandemic. I knew I was going to the right place, I guess.
So you're going to be making a podcast episode on Texas?
We did a U.S. Southern episode. So we broke up the U.S. into three different sections. And I heavily focused on Texas and especially Houston. I think it's a bit of an underrated city. It gets a bit of a bad rap, but it's really cool city.
There's lots I remember it got rated quite a lot of melons by you.
Huge amount of melons. We obviously do four melons on our podcast. Don't miss the bus. And it's when I first got here, I thought it was the ugliest city, concrete jungle. Why would you want to come here? But it's not obvious. You need to be able to know a local. I'm actually in the middle of setting up a walking and biking tour of Houston. So if any of your listeners are ever in Houston, look up Howdy H-Town, and I'll show you why it's such a good city.
Shameless plugging. I love it.
You got to plug it.
You know that all our listeners are based in Southeast Asia, so it's going to be no good to you today.
Yeah, that's probably true. But look, I can learn Vietnamese, I can learn Thai. I'll give it a good go.
I mean, I believe that you can do it. I've been listening along to your podcast avidly, and the the adventures all over the world are just, they're just incredible. The shenanigans that you get up to, the places that you go to, I don't believe that Melon Man could ever be stopped. He's a truly international force.
That's a big rap. They're big shoes to fill there. So, yeah. Thanks, I guess.
You're very welcome. And in fact, I think this comes back to your very first episode on your podcast was pretty spectacular, because it was the birth of Melon Man in South Africa. And that is a story that Mark came on our podcast to tell.
Yeah, I feel a little bit starstruck, actually, because when I heard that story, it was incredible, the story of Melon Man. And then we've actually got him on the show. It's an incredible thing.
Yeah, I've got the Melon shirt on. I've also got my Banana Man pants on. And yeah, Melon Man was born at a pub in Cape Town. I had to quieten down Mark. He's pretty arrogant at times, and he needed a bit of a challenge, and Melon Man was up to the task.
I can't believe, because everyone that knows Mark knows that his ego would have taken a massive hit when the great almighty pillar of Superman was just pushed to one side by Melon Man.
It was. I can give you a couple more instances where Mark's ego has been hit, if you want to hit him up for future episodes, when he tried to be Mr. Bear UK in a London gay nightclub. That was one to remember. But Melon Man was definitely the defining moment.
I quite like the sound of this, having a recurring rivalry on a podcast. We just keep getting the same two guests have slide against each other in different episodes.
Sounds good to me.
So anyway, Rory, how did you come to know Sean?
I came to know Sean through Mark and listening to your podcast. Your stories are out there. I don't know if I'm going to be able to fill the shoes of some of the stories, but I hope that I can lead you on a bit of an adventure and tell you some stories about probably the most strangest year of my life. Or weirdest.
That is exactly what this podcast is all about. We find interesting people who just so happen to be fruit-based superheroes having the most interesting and weird times of their lives.
It's a very niche market, that, isn't it?
It's expanding. You'll never know. Like, the fruit market, you got to have your fruit.
You got to have your five a day, and Melon Man is just the first on the list.
Yes, that's true. Harry Styles knows it. He loves his watermelon. Yeah, it's taking off.
It's taking off at a spectacular speed, and that is why I'm so desperate to hear this story from the weirdest time in your life. Because you sent me a message earlier with a couple of snippets of what might come up, and I got very excited, because this is going to be a story, at least, that I'm going to thoroughly enjoy. And I know that a lot of our listeners will be very intrigued at the weird shenanigans that are going on there. And this was the weirdest time in your life. This was when you were living in Africa, right?
Yeah. So if I start this story, I need to start the pretense of how I got to Africa. So I was married to an American woman. We went down to South America. The marriage lasted a whole 4 months. Fell apart.
That's a little embarrassing, because even my marriage has lasted way longer than that.
How many months have you got through?
I'll be honest, in the eyes of the law, it's still ongoing, which puts it at 2 years.
He hasn't seen her for 1.5 years.
It's impressive. That's impressive. It's not easy being married. So I was married for 4 months, and it all fell apart. She went back to Seattle, and I went back to try and make it work. And within 4 days, I was out on my ass, living in a hostel, contemplating what I had done with my life and where do I go next. And I got on the phone to my friend Mark, or Superman, and I said, how'd you get a job as a tour guide in Europe? And so he gave me a list of companies, and I sent off resumes and applied. And I also, at the same time, decided to go off and spend 2 months doing this wilderness course, clear my head. It was a month sea kayaking in the Broughtons, which is off Vancouver Island, and a month mountaineering in the Cascade Mountains. And so I went off to the Broughtons, and it was great. And then I came back, and we had 3 days back at the branch, and I checked my emails, and a company said, look, we're all full for Europe, but would you be interested in going to Africa? And I had never heard, I'd never been to Africa. I didn't know much about Africa. I said, yeah, sure, why not? So I interviewed
Was not even a little bit of hesitation. I mean, just for the safety and security aspect, from inner city Europe to Africa, the African wilderness is quite a jump in expectations, yeah. Isn't it?
It was, but I was at a loose end. I was like, let's just go for it. Why not? And
you were like, my marriage is over, so that's it. I'm going to go and join a tribe.
pretty much. Maybe I'd find an African beauty of my own.
There's always hope, isn't there?
There is always hope. But anyways, I went out and did another month of mountaineering and came back, and I flew to London. They gave me 5 days training. They said, yep, 5 days training, you're ready to go to Africa. So at that stage, they booked me a flight, and we had a stop off in Addis Ababa, and I missed the connection down to Nairobi. And I had to ring my boss from Addis Ababa saying, yeah, I'm stuck in Addis Ababa. Me not knowing what country that is. That's how little I knew about the continent of Africa.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was looking at Keelan when you said that and he was so lost.
I'm lost how you get a job as a tour guide and then don't know what country you're in. Surely that's your one job, to know the places you're going.
Well, yeah, Wikipedia was a big help of mine. And the plan was that I was going to get 5 weeks of training under this American girl. And then there was another guy that was training with me, and he was going to take over. I was going to get a week training under him. And then it was a 76-day loop. He was going to continue, and I was going to fly back up and start the tours. Perfect. No rush to learn too much about Africa. I've got 5 to 6 weeks to learn all of this stuff. So that didn't work out. The guy I was training with got sacked after 7 days. He was jumping in front of passengers, trying to hit on all the girls, and he wasn't smooth at all. There was no chance.
Wait. Was this person Mark? Because this sounds a lot like him on a lot of our tours.
It does sound a lot like him. Mark is surprisingly charming, especially with a few beers in him and the person being charmed upon. Mark's got some moves. He's got magic. But this fella didn't. He was sacked within 7 days. And the girl that was training us ended up quitting after 10 days. So I was left to lead a tour for the next 66 days through Africa, Eastern Southern Africa. And I didn't know a lot at all. I knew nothing. So I was winging it the whole time, and I learned a lot.
That's really throwing it at the deep end, isn't it? That's crazy. You turn up expecting to get taught something, and they're like, right, 2 months in Africa, incredibly dangerous continent, don't kill the tourists, go.
Yeah, and you don't even know what country you're in either. And you've got to try and figure out how to be a tour guide to a bunch full of people.
That's a terrifying prospect. How did you even survive that debacle?
It was sink or swim. We had drivers that had been on the road for 8 years, so I was picking their brains constantly. But some of the guests had been introduced to us as these are trainees, and then the girl quit, and it was okay, now you're taking over the tour. So it wasn't like I could bluff it to them. They all knew I was a trainee. So yeah, you just did as much as you could and worked as hard as you could, and that's all I could do, sort of thing.
This is all a really great positive attitude to have in such a horrible situation, but the fact that you're bringing this up on our podcast tells me that something spiraled and went horribly wrong.
There was a couple of moments. There was one, I was in Tanzania, and so there was 13 different countries that we would go through. And so I'd have these pencil cases full of different currencies, and the last guy had handed them all over to me. And I had to pay for accommodation, food for all the guests, and the guests would give US dollars when they first arrived, and I would have to transfer that into the local currency. So I got to Tanzania the first time, and we were there for over a week, and I had 26 passengers. So it was like $1,000 US, let's do that into Tanzanian shillings. And so I went up to the window, and I didn't bring a bag or anything, and I handed them the $1,000 US, and all of a sudden I thought it would just be a wad. It would be able to fit in the pencil case. But they gave me an A4 envelope full of currency overflowing. And I'm walking through the streets with these wads of notes coming out of this envelope. And the people around me are just looking at me like this. They're going to jump me.
That is terrible temptation right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it was at the driver. When I got back, the driver was shaking his head like, what are you doing? You're asking to be robbed. And also we went out to the Serengeti. So if you're ever in Tanzania, want to do a wildlife tour, go out to the Serengeti and you camp out there. And the first night we were there, they told us you need to take in your shoes because animals come through and take things from out the front of your tents. And if you get on YouTube, you can actually look at videos of lionesses licking the dew off the outside of a tent in the Serengeti while somebody's inside filming. It's pretty out there. But when I was there, I fell asleep one night, and 2 meters behind my head was a trash can. I've been in America too long, but a rubbish bin. And the hyenas had come through and torn this rubbish bin to shreds, and it was just destroyed. And it happens all the time out there.
So they were just tearing it apart while it was right by your head?
Tearing it apart. I slept through the whole thing, but it saw the next morning what had happened.
That is crazy. You slept through a hyena attack on the rubbish bin next to your head. That could have gone wildly wrong.
it could have. I don't know how I would have felt if I was awake. I would have.
My big question there would have been, if you did wake up and saw the hyenas going at this bin right next to you, would your instinct be to scare away the hyenas or to just cower inside the tent and hope they didn't sniff you out?
Definitely the latter. Cowering inside the tent would have been, been my option.
Oh, that's running away from all of the adventure. As soon as a wild animal starts attacking my campsite, I see that as an opportunity to create some world-beating shenanigans.
What, just send your army of kids out to defend yourself against the hyena?
Hey, it worked against the bears. I feel like I can take on the hyenas too.
How many kids did you lose that way, Sean?
But let's put it this way. I'm no longer employed in that position. But fortunately for Murray, his tourists were all kept very safe because he slept right through the whole incident.
pretty much. If you don't know about it, then you can't, solve it.
You're not selling these trips to me. You said that you should go out to Tanzania and sleep in a tent where there's like wild animals walking about. You're not really selling it.
It's really funny because me and Keelan were discussing before this. Obviously, I was telling Keelan about yours and Mark's podcast and about all of your adventures as tour guides. And we were saying we'd love to go to Africa so much, like to go on a big journey, an epic adventure like that. And then we get on this episode, it's like, hyenas like destroying the trash behind my head. It could have gone horribly wrong. Keelan's face has just gone white.
No, I've gone off it now.
Look, it's that's part of the adventure, You got a story from it. That's why you're asked on podcasts. And if the hyenas didn't come through, then I wouldn't be telling the story.
Very true. Well played, sir. Well played. So what happened on the rest of this adventure after you survived the incident with the hyenas?
Jeez. What else has happened? So couple of good things and bad things. I learned to keep my mouth shut when drunk in a bar. I was in a bar in Namibia, and there was some Afrikaans that were saying some racist things, and I called them out, probably because I had had too many beers. And he wanted to fight. And now this Afrikaans was twice my size. I'm a little man. Malaman's a pretty small, tiny human being. And
but packs a lot of flavor.
This is true. But he grabbed me and he wanted to fight. And I had 20-odd passengers around. I'm not going to fight this guy. That's my excuse anyway. But he grabbed my shirt and he headbutted me. So I'm in the middle of this bar, club, shed in Namibia, stumbling around. Could be because of the beers, could be because of the headbutt. And one of my passengers grabs me. She was a lot stronger than me, and she took me outside and just sat me down. She's like, look, I'll go get the rest of the team. So went inside, and I thought, you know, our hostel's just over the road. It's not too far. I'll walk back. So I'm walking back, and it's not just over the road. My direction's usually pretty good, but this time I was in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, I hear from behind me, there he is. And I turn around, and these five big guys are running towards me. And as you can imagine, I ran like the wind. I ran and ran and ran and turned this corner, and I was going down this side street, and out of nowhere came this security car and screeched around in front of me and sort of stopped in front of me, and two guys got out and pinned me to the front of the security car. And they're saying, why did you do it? Why did you do it? And I was like, why did I do what? They put me in the back of this security car and took me to a petrol station. And what I found out, there was about 60 or 70 people at this petrol station, but somebody had just robbed it. And they thought, because I was running through the streets next to it, I had robbed the petrol station.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. That's such a bad...
What an escalation of a night. You're running away from getting attacked in a bar fight. You ended up getting arrested for a petrol station robbing.
Exactly.
What a mental procedure.
Yeah, I was gobsmacked. I just... Okay. The worst part about it then was there was two cars full of Afrikaans guys started to show up. And so I said to the security guards, I was like, just don't let me out of this car. Don't let them near me.
You were like, you know what? I'll happily get arrested for robbing the petrol station just as long as you don't let me get beaten up by these Afrikaans guys.
Pretty much. Self-preservation at that stage. After that, it was there for half an hour, 40 minutes, and half of them were saying, he did it. The other half was saying, no, that's not him. And eventually the security guards got in the car and they said, we know you didn't do it. Put your head down. We're getting you out of this. And they screeched out and took me back to the place we were staying, the hostel. Just as
you're so lucky. That's crazy. You could have very easily ended up in a Nairobi jail for years on
literally
end
years.
For a crime you never committed in the worst imaginable conditions that you could think of. Like in a Nairobi jail. You don't imagine it's 5-star quality.
You know what my favourite thing is? The fact that I nearly forgot about this part of the story. He had to just tighten at the end. Oh yeah, remember when I nearly got arrested for like years?
Do you remember where my life was nearly destroyed?
It was the worst part about it was for the rest of the trip, we pulled in when my passengers were getting home. So they wanted to know what had happened to me. I had disappeared. And I obviously told them that I nearly got accused of robbing a petrol station. So the joke for the rest of the trip was every time we went past a petrol station, they would be saying to me, hey, Rory, don't rob this one either.
You became a serial career criminal across the plains of Africa. And I love it.
So, yeah, I learned a lot in Africa. I had a lot of really good times. Anything goes in Africa. And you just got to roll with the punches. TIA, This Is Africa is a big thing over there.
Although, really, you never roll with the punches. You run away from the punches and instead incriminate yourself
in a petrol station robbery.
This is true. This is true.
So how, on the back of that, how many melons does Namibia get?
The people of Namibia got a pretty low rating, but the rest of Namibia, the landscape in Namibia is phenomenal, and there's lots to do in Namibia. I think it's an underrated country.
A lot of really great petrol stations as well. There's a lot of cash behind those counters. If we've got any listeners listening along in Africa, we all know that if you commit a petrol robbery over there, you probably get away with it.
Yeah, they'll just arrest someone that's running.
Especially if you're wearing a Melon Man shirt.
That's the real heroism of Melon Man. He doesn't prevent any crimes. It's just, if you commit one, he'll take the rap for you. That's what makes him a hero.
The fall guy.
That is truly remarkable. And I cannot believe that we get to talk to you on this podcast when you're free as a bird over in Texas, when you could have very easily been locked away in a dark cell in Namibia, never to be found again.
This is true. This is true. And then Melon Man may never have been born. The world may never have heard of him.
And I tell you what, a world without Melon Man, it's not a world that I would ever want to live in.
What the fuck is this?